This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, it takes a hop off the path.
You gotta be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You gotta hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that!
Well, I would like to welcome to the Sub 70 podcast a favorite of the great Hank Haney. Tons of opinions out on social media. Big Boy Pants Golf is doing this with us finally. It's an honor to have you here, fine sir.
Jason, it's awesome to be the first golf YouTuber on the Sub 70 podcast. I feel like I'm being called up from AAA after having Tommy John surgery, and I'm ready to bring the heat today, sir.
Well, there's a lot of heat to talk about. Let's start with the low-hanging fruit, the Masters. It's over. Let's talk about the play, then we'll get into sort of the strange stuff a little bit with Greg Norman showing up and all that. But just, you're also a golf fan, so give me your opinion from 1,000 feet in the air. What did we witness? What are we seeing out of Scheffler? What was your takeaway from one of the best weeks in golf?
I mean, it's still the Masters at the end of the day. You got Scotty Scheffler truly showing he is now kind of a dominant figure in golf. He's got up to two majors now. He's got the Players' Championship. He's already basically Hall of Fame resume, right?
I would agree. I mean, if he ain't there, he's probably there if he just stopped playing right now. Two majors and two players. Yeah, I would say he's probably in.
So he's already, I mean, remember we have like the Freddie Couples standard where you have like one major and a bunch of players and that'll still get you in. He's definitely Hall of Famer now, but you know, the criticism of him is, as I heard on one podcast, he has no riz. He's not exactly the most charismatic guy. We also know at the end of every interview he gives, he's going to, you know, basically say the same stuff. He's very talented, but I don't know if Scotty Scheffler is necessarily the guy who is going to attract non-golf fans into the game. What do you think on that?
I agree with you. I don't know him personally, but people I do who do know him, he's like a really good quality guy. His family life seems to be in really good, you know, a good space. He's playing some unbelievable golf, especially from the ball striking standpoint. He's putting it well enough to obviously win. But no, I don't see the magnetism of a, you know, a Tiger or a Phil or even like a Tommy Fleetwood, right? Like, I love Tommy Fleetwood. There's no what could happen next. There's no aura of star power, right? Like I respect his game, but and I think he's, like you said, he's in his 20s and a Hall of Famer. Unbelievable stuff. But does it have that? If I was trying to put myself back as like that 13-year-old impressionable kid, would I be like, now that dude, okay, I want to be that when I grow up. Like when you're that age. I don't know if he has that star power. The star power comes from respect from his golf game, how good he plays. But it's not the charisma that those other guys, I think, have.
And, you know, I'm 48. We're both similar age.
Yep.
You got to think, back in our day, the guy who had the riz was Freddie Couples.
Oh, yeah.
So now Norman. You're getting the – yeah, there yep. You go. You got to have these guys. Norman, exactly. You're not going to wear the Sharks straw hat, but you will get Freddie Couples' double XXL Ashworth golf shirts and the FootJoy saddle shoes.
Yeah, but Fred, it was different, right? Like, Freddie just had this aura. It was just this aura around him of you know, the silky smooth golf swing, the sort of, you know, nonchalant attitude, at least to the public, right, of how he conducted himself. Like, I love Freddie Couples in his heyday. Like, that was my guy, you know, and you know, there's a lot of guys from that era that had that sort of, you knew who they all were. Scotty Scheffler is a great player, but there's not that, I don't see that swagger of a Greg Norman or a Freddie or, you know, with John Daly or all those guys from that era that I grew up watching, you know, play. Tommy Armour III and Kelk and all those guys, right? Like, there was a little bit more to them.
Right, but here's another question. Just kind of from a philosophical perspective, has Scotty Scheffler muted whatever person he has because of the media nowadays?
I would guess probably yes, because you can make so much money doing what they're doing, why take the risk and be in the have a gotcha moment, right? He's going to wind up really wealthy and a great resume with no bullshit, probably with no problems. So if that's the goal, you know, I can understand how a PR person would say, hey, man, like, let's not rock the boat. You're making $25-30 million a year. People like, you know, they don't have negative thoughts about you. We don't need a divorce. We don't need any bullshit, which I don't think there is any. Let's just keep winning golf tournaments and you'll be fine. So yeah, I mean, as much as it's a gotcha media anymore, you know, I'm sure the antics of the 90s would be called out today, and back then it wasn't, right? The reporters kind of protected those guys.
Right. I mean, the first guy, if you recall, to really get in the gotcha moment was probably Fuzzy Zeller back at the Masters.
Well, there was no way to guard against that one.
Right. But
right.
So
yeah,
he's kind of gotcha. He's saying something kind of off the cuff. He gets burned for it. And then you have basically, even when Tiger came out, if you remember reading the articles, he would tell some off-color jokes. He gets, you know, dragged over the coals for it. And then, you know, you clam up.
Yes. I mean, right. I think those guys have seen what's happened in the past and sort of learned their lesson. But yeah, I think, I've heard he's a great dude, but I wonder the same thing of like how much of that is muted and he's just going to play golf and win golf tournaments. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, you know, he's going to win a lot of them. There's a lot to like there.
Well, I mean, his ball striking's phenomenal. It puts almost a mute on the telecast because you don't expect him to make mistakes. It's just basically like prime Tiger, fairways, greens, you know, do well in the par fives.
Yeah, and you get the sense he's not going to beat himself. As he keeps winning these bigger tournaments, it's almost going to be getting, you can tell it's just getting easier for him, right? The self-belief, the power fade working, he knows he can get the ball in the hole if he needs to. So that, you know, winning breeds winning, confidence breeds confidence, right?
There it is.
And he's completely doing that. No, he's a hell of a player, man. I was hoping it would be a little bit more. I love Ludwig, you know. I like Fleetwood. I was hoping you would see some fireworks on the back nine where, you know, it was a little bit more competitive. But once Scotty kind of got going, you're like, yeah, this thing's over.
My takeaway from this Masters is that essentially, yes, Scotty Scheffler is, you know, established himself as a dominant player, but now you have Ludwig Åberg, really, or Åberg, showing what his potential is, because that guy looked as cool as cucumber. His first major, finishes second.
I know JJ Killeen a little bit, and he's been raving about him, you know, because JJ's down in they play out the same club at Red Feather down in Texas Tech. And JJ's like, he's so good, and he's proving it, right? Like, you were hearing about him before he turned pro, and he has exceeded every expectation as a pro. I think that kid's the real deal. I really do.
How about that moment in the Masters telecast where Åberg is eating a protein bar? He's still kind of high-fiving fans, and one of them hits the protein bar out of his hand, and he's as cool as cucumber too, laughs it off, keeps on going. This dude is taking in 3,000, 4,000 calories during the final round.
Yeah, the moment, like, as well as he performed in the Ryder Cup, I just don't think these moments are too big. A lot of these younger guys anymore, man, like, the moments aren't, you remember back in the day from our age, like, gosh, those guys had to learn how to be pros. And they kind of got good, like, at Curtis Strange's age, like, just prime, like, in the 80s, or I'm sorry, in the 80s, 88, 89, what was he, 30, 31 years old? It's different anymore. If it's the starting earlier, better golf swings, you know, TrackMan making the mistakes in your swing go down under pressure, the mental coaches, these guys just come out and they're ready to win. And you're seeing that with all these young guys, they're peaking earlier. And I don't think that trend line is going to change. It's going to continue.
Well, it's interesting too. That becomes more like the LPGA because, you know, as of the last 10 years, it's basically these teenagers and early 20 somethings that are dominant. And then once you hear of an LPGA player hitting 30, 33, you think she's a little bit up there in years.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, with the way the tour is going, as hard as they're swinging, if you're going to see this sport to be a little bit more like other pro sports, by the time these guys are, say, like 40, yes, you know, they can still play at times, but is their bodies just going to be pretty much shot, you know, for as aggressive as the game is played and power is huge? You know, how many of these guys are going to be able to do it like, you know, Tom Kite for 30 years on the PGA Tour anymore? Like, I, you know, I've often wondered about that too.
It's definitely more of a feel of, you know, trying to maximize your youth. Since you've got to try to compete up with the guy who has 125 miles per hour club at speed, you've also got to get up there with them. You don't want to lose that distance advantage or at least be competitive. So you do have pressure nowadays to, you know, hit it 320.
Yeah, and the math would prove that out, that that's correct too, right? Like, that's the way to do it. You know, being mid-length and being straight is not an advantage. Math will tell you that at this juncture.
Right. So now we got into the Masters. Basically, by the last four holes, it's over. There's really not a lot of drama. It's just a coronation ceremony at this point. You know, I don't know how much that's going to help, because apparently, according to CBS, the numbers were down 20%. But then, of course, you have the asterisks. You know, how many people are watching on the Masters app?
That's my question, right? Like, you have that thing going, and the app is so good. And if you got whatever, you know, an iPad, a tablet, something going, hooking up the internet through your TV to watch it, you know, so you can watch certain groups. Like, how much of that do you think is part of it? Now, I know that ratings have been down on golf, you know, throughout the season. What's your gut? You follow this pretty closely. What do you think? Do you think it's cumulatively, it was up, or do you think it's actually down, even if you added up the guys, you know, watching it on the app per se?
You know, I will not weigh in on that one because you don't really know. I don't want to speculate on that, but you can say for the season overall, every tournament is basically down, right? Mostly.
Yeah.
And that's, so you don't even have to focus on the Masters and, you know, factor in whether or not the app makes up for the difference in the viewership. Overall, the trend is down. But what's interesting in relation to the Masters views, remember that Rory had said before the Masters, whether or not the numbers were up or down, it still meant, or it should still be interpreted, that the leagues should come together. The PGA Tour and the LIV should still merge.
Yeah, what do you think about, yeah, like with that all being said, what do you think about, what's your view of Norman buying a ticket and going out there? Like, strange for a player of his level and everything he's accomplished to have to buy a ticket to go to a tournament. What do you think the reason was behind that? Like, do you think it's a smart move? Should he have just stayed away that week? What's your sort of view of Norman and the Masters in 2024?
Well, to me, he should have been given a ticket because, remember, we're supposedly watching these tours trying to figure out how to merge, correct?
Baffled as you are on that one. Plus, I think they used to give tickets to former major champions, right?
Well, I mean, they already set the precedent with the British Open when they're like, they didn't want to make a spectacle of it, so they didn't let Norman come.
Yeah. Which was kind of weird.
Still have that in the background. But that was when there was no merger talk on the table. Now that you have all this merger talk and you're, you know, actively making progress, it doesn't make sense that you wouldn't, you know, be graceful and have Norman there.
So with that being said, why do you think he bought a ticket? And do you think his presence is still good? Is it good that people are talking about him during the week of the Masters when, you know, there's no LIV event going on? Do you think it's smart on his part, or is it too much? Like, if you were from a marketing standpoint, from a PR standpoint, what's your view of him just being out there? Then they're not going to give him a ticket for whatever reason. So do you think he did the right thing by saying, I'll just take it into my own hands?
I 100% think he did the right thing going out there, refusing to be treated as a pariah. So, you know, in terms of, he sat back long enough. And when you sit back with this media, remember after the merger, all the talk was for the first week was in the fine print that they were going to get rid of Norman. Do you recall that from after the June 6th merger? All the little podcasts were saying, well, you know, Norman was definitely on the chopping block. Once they merged, they're getting rid of him. But you got to think that this guy, I mean, Norman back in the 90s pretty much had the idea that the PGA Tour took and made it into the World Golf Championships.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a weird anti-Greg Norman stance on this whole situation. And yes, I understand if you were part of the status quo, you don't want anyone to rock the boat, and that's what Greg Norman did. But you also got – I just listened to Seth Waugh, the CEO of the PGA of America, come out on, you know, on the Fairways of Life with Matt Adams, and he was just saying how they need a disruption now. Now all the buzzwords are disruption and then, you know, opportunity. So no matter which way Norman went, he would have been grilled, you know, and the day. And I think he has to just come out now and LIV in general has to come out instead of, you know, letting – the Golf Channel and the other media outlets frame the narratives. They've got to start putting out their own narrative. I mean, not narratives, but in terms of their own mission statements and their own evidence and their own receipts.
With Rory saying basically, I'm not moving, and you don't know if the reports are real or not real, but it would have been a boatload of money if he did go. So if he's now off the table back on the PGA Tour, how do you see, and let's assume this merger is still in everyone's best interest at this point. Basically, they both have guns to each other's heads from the lawsuit standpoint and the PR and all of it, and ratings down, and they have to make this happen. How do you see it happening? How long do you think it would take, and how do you see it playing out if there is a merger? Is Live the premier, like a premier league where everything else feeds into it and guys are relegated and the tournaments around the world? Like, how do you envision it working, assuming they get a merger done? And, you know, how do you think this process comes about from the research you've done?
In terms of overall, and this is, again, this is all speculation, you'd have Live be the premier league. But then you also have questions then, and how does, you know, what benefit would the PGA Tour then essentially have of being the feeder tour, correct?
I think you would have, I mean, I can't imagine Liv's going to, whatever they call Liv or whatever that is, that has to be the big boy tour, right?
Yeah.
Where the money and those tournaments with no cut, and you earn your way into that, and you can also get kicked off of it based on performance. And it's got to be a worldwide tour. Now, then the question is then how does the European, or I'm sorry, DP World Tour work into that? What do they do with Korn Ferry? How does all this stuff then play out for people to relegate up and down? That part I don't have figured out in my head, but I can't imagine the, call it whatever it is, Live / PGA Tour, World Tour, isn't the premier tour in the world with the most prestige, best fields, and biggest purses, probably even over the majors.
Right. So that the only compromise then that would be, as they said initially, that Jay Monahan, who's going to obviously be, I guess, be the CEO of PGA Tour Enterprises now, would have to run that because of otherwise.
Is that possible, though, at this point? Or does Jay just have to go and it's just over?
It's shocking that it's lasted as long, isn't it? I mean, you could have seen him gone any time within the past year. Certainly by the time it's December, you know, the end of December last year, when, as per the framework agreement, they were supposed to have it figured out. Then they pushed it back to before the Masters. Now the Masters is coming on. And then you have Paul McGinley come out and say, this thing could take years. Who's going to suffer more the longer it takes, in my opinion, is the PGA Tour. Because if you don't have the financial backing to just keep it up, you've already gone through your war chest, and now sponsors are leaving. A lot of sponsors left last year. You know, they're not re-upping. So to me, the PGA Tour then gets SSG involved. And remember, SSG is heavily comprised of Fenway Sports, where Jay was a high-ranking position before he came over to the PGA Tour. So there's a little bit of, like, you know, inner team play here, because Jay Monahan is fielding specific offers from guys he wants, whereas he could have been working the whole time with Piff. But now he's going to frame it as, I'm going to try to get them the strongest decision possible before I deal with Piff, because he's been saying that before. It's a very shady situation with a very shady character who literally co-opted the 9/11 families, thought that was a smart play, and then when it wasn't working, you know, immediately flipped on it and said, hey, we'll accept the PIF money. So when you're dealing with a person with that complete lack of integrity, anything is possible.
Yeah, I thought after that one, he just might say, look, I'm hearing it from the players, they want to merge. I'm the wrong guy for this. I don't think it's the right move. I'm going to resign. And then when he switched gears on after that one, I didn't think there was any way he could come back with credibility. And I thought the players at that point would essentially vote to boot him, in the sense, because he should have taken the meeting from the front end. If someone's going to come into your company and invest, you know, somebody comes to me with sub-70 golf with a great idea and a bunch of cash and says, hey, I think we can help and make it a better organization, I'm at least taking the meeting. Right? I'm at least going to have my team look at this. And it sounds like they never did, which is just so strange to me as a business guy. Like, how do you not take that meeting? Those guys are not messing around from Saudi Arabia. They got more money than God. And once they get their hands on something, they're pretty serious characters on what they're trying to build. So it's just so weird of how they thought they were going to outlast that.
Well, what's even odder than that is, remember, this is early 2022 when the LIV Golf League start talking, right? And that's when we start hearing about it. Phil Mickelson comes out with Alan Shipnuck, and it blows up. A few months earlier, the little small blurb in golf magazines is, oh, by the way, the European Tour is now renamed the DP World Tour. And that flew under the radar without a whole big deal. But so it's okay that the European Tour is now the DP World Tour, and that's Dubai Ports World Tour, which is a wholly owned Dubai subsidiary company. And then we have no issues with that. But then now if LIV wants to have – if the Saudi Arabians want to have money involved in the golf, that's an issue?
Yeah, and the other thing I never quite understood is how many of those companies that are multinational on the PGA Tour who sponsor events also have offices in Riyadh. I'm guessing, what, 75-80% of them?
Exactly. And even FedEx recently partnered up with Saudi Arabia, and you got FedEx obviously sponsoring the FedEx Cup. So none of it really, from an outsider's perspective, makes any sense. But, I mean, sure, there's a lot of guys with a lot of, you know, knowledge of the inner workings, I'm sure, who it makes sense for certain people and certain pockets.
If it comes together, though, and it's done well, like, I think it could be exciting. Like I was at the LIV event in Chicago last year. I had like a really good time. Like, you know, the event is fun. My wife, who's not a golf fan, had a blast out there because we were at the party hole and went to the concert afterwards, and the concert was great. Like it's fun. Like it's a good time. And even my wife recognized a lot of the names, right? There's DJ, you know, there's Henrik, like there's Poulter, there's something to be said about that, you know, brand recognition of those players. I thought it was fun. Like, and it moved well in the sense, like, I'm talking from, like, you know, the non-traditional golf fan. Like, with the shotgun start, there wasn't a bunch of dead time on that party hole of groups coming through. Like, we had a really fun day with it. I don't know if you've been out to one of the events, but, you know, I enjoyed it and I enjoyed going to a PGA Tour event, too. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, friends out there as well. Like, I love watching live golf, but it was like a different experience with the music and everything and the concert after. Like, it was a fun, like, couple's day out there at a golf tournament. It just wasn't about the, it wasn't just all about the golf. It was like, you know, having yourself a day and a half. Like, it was fun.
I've been to LIV Tucson and LIV Vegas, exactly the same experience. And that's what golf in general needs, is to bring in the general population. You know what I mean? Even if potentially golf is in the background, at least you're getting people exposed to it versus the PGA Tour, where, I mean, I also enjoy those events. I've been to Korn Ferry Tour events. I marshaled at one, you know, just standing out there in the – hoping not to get hit in the head. But so, you know, I'm all around a golf enthusiast. But you got to think, if we're going to start getting the game to grow and more people involved, you got to bring in the people who aren't necessarily golf first. Maybe they like the other aspects, and eventually – they segue over into a being a golfer. And this has happened. I've had like dog friend buddy, a younger guy. And I said, hey dude, why don't you try golf sometime? For years, nothing. Suddenly he gets hooked by on his own, now loves golf. And that gets him to start watching golf. So for me, it's always been, you know, whatever it takes to get them into the golf environment, try out golf a little bit. And then that's the push off to actually being a fan of watching golf versus other sports where, you know, most of them, you don't have to necessarily play the sport. I'm never going to throw, you know, a touchdown pass, but I'll watch a Super Bowl. But with golf, I feel like you have to be more of an active participant to have an interest in watching, like a Scottie Scheffler dominate. Otherwise, it really isn't going to hold your attention.
Yeah, and the other thing, it's like, it's going to be interesting, I think, on the PGA Tour is, like, we were talking about the sponsors pulling out, in the event I love, I mean, I grew up going out there, right, as a kid, is the John Deere Classic. That's kind of our hometown event for where we're located. And, it's not going to be a signature event. The field is going to be arguably weaker than ever. I mean, I think that, you know, the good part is you could see some really good amateurs who will get some starts out there. But, like, how does that event get marketed going forward? And, like, I'm a golf nut. Like, I'm going out there regardless, right? Like, I'm going out there. How do you get people to watch it and go out to it? It's a great event. Like, the people are friendly. The pork chop sandwiches are awesome. You get to see great players. You know, I consider great players. Still on PGA Tour, you're a great player, right? You go watch them hit a golf ball. And if you've never seen it before, what a plus seven handicap or plus six handicap looks like up close, it's amazing how good those guys are compared to even a really good amateur golfer. But how are they going to market those events and make them relevant? And unless you're, you know, and not counting me, because I'm going out there to watch. Like, how do you do that?
And they're already failing at doing that. That's why the John Deere, the 3M, the Rocket Mortgage, all these non-signature events, because the PGA Tour went out of its way already to be like, we're going to cater to the top tier guys. We're going to put them in the signature events, thereby already making, you know, a two-tier tour. And so you're going to have tier upon tier upon tier. And what's going to happen is you're going to want – everyone's going to watch the premier events and not watch – how many Korn Ferry Tour events do you watch on TV, for example?
Well, unfortunately, they don't show that many anymore, because I would actually watch that a little bit more, because I actually, as a golf fan, I love watching those young guys fighting for that card, right? You know, to me, it's very interesting, right? And especially if I know a few of them, I love that tour of just what that, you know, you got guys who don't have $20 million in the bank.
Right.
Right, really competing. So I always find that part of it. But, I mean, they're not on very much. But if it's on, I actually find it, like, the year-end stuff, like, I find it pretty dramatic. Like, because usually I'll know some of the guys in there. And watching a young guy or a veteran fighting for their card to get back out there, to me, is always a really interesting story. How many events are on there anymore? On the Golf Channel, even? Three a year?
Well, I saw Four? Aaron Baddeley on the range at the Korn Ferry Tour, at a Korn Ferry Tour event out in Vegas a few years ago. And it's just fascinating just to watch, you know, obviously a pure ball striker, and realize that he's struggling to get on the PGA Tour. That's how good these guys are, that this guy's amazing, phenomenal ball striker. I can watch him on the range for 4 hours if I could. I would just sit there. And his game isn't PGA Tour level right now. So,
well, he's come back this year a little bit, hasn't he?
He'll pop up in here, but we also don't know what that effect of having, you know, 48, 50 to 52 guys on the LIV Golf Tour has, you know, given a lot of other guys opportunity.
100%, right? Like, and that's the part of this where I don't understand how the players are upset for the guys going to LIV Tour, because the guys who are left on the PGA Tour are making more money than ever, and it's never been easier to make more money than ever when you took 50 world-class players, throw the world rankings out, but 50 world-class players and remove them from the competition you have to beat between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. I would be thanking them.
I would be thanking them, right? Too, but I would also point out that just like remember the Nationwide Tour, the first time, I think it was like 2002, that the Nationwide Tour's final purse was $1 million.
Yep.
And up until 2 years ago, it was $1 million. Like the final tour, Korn Ferry Tour final purse was still like $1 million for almost 20 years. So the question then becomes, like, how are they going to argue for more money, or does it become – the purses become stagnant like the Korn Ferry Tours were for a long time?
I don't know if they – you're talking about the current PGA Tour purses? I don't – if that's the case, I don't know if they can sustain if sponsors keep backing out and TV ratings go down. I don't know how they can keep – well, they have the – okay, if they didn't have the injection of capital from that
– No, group, I agree with you.
I don't know how it was sustainable.
So it's not only is it not sustainable, even if it was sustainable, like on the Korn Ferry Tour level, you know, the players are obviously losing out to inflation then. If 2002 purse is $1 million, and then 2021 on the Korn Ferry Tour Championship purse is $1 million, you're making less.
Oh, 100%. And they kind of want that tour for the guy. I mean, they don't want people out on the Korn Ferry Tour for 10 years, right? It's sort of designed to get through or quit. Right, they almost like don't want that tour comfortable for you.
Right, which is weird because they also just combined the Latin America and the PGA Canadian tour development tours, right? And made it like the PGA of Americas. And now,
yep, but same thing. It's not designed to be out there for 5 years doing it.
And how would you financially be able to afford it now that you have more travel expenses?
That's why it's tough. I mean, right. I know guys on that tour. It's tough. Like, it's designed to sort of shit or get off the pot, right? You're not going to play that for 5 years and make any money,
right?
Right, because if you did that well, you're going on the Korn Ferry Tour, right? You cannot hang on to that tour for 5 years and do it. unless you have family money or something like that where it doesn't matter. But it's designed to be kind of, if you don't make it, it's not designed to be a lifestyle you can lead in the long run, raise a family and buy a house on.
Right. But you also have, like, I guess I was listening to a Korn Ferry Tour player, and I think he said the break-even figure was about 80 grand once you account for taxes and paying your caddy. So even that tour, you've got to perform reasonably well to not, you know, lose.
I would say 80 would be cheap by the time you're traveling, paying for a caddy and hotels and all the rest of it.
Right.
I'd be shocked. I mean, 80 would be, I mean, bare bone in it. I think it's more about a $110 to do it somewhat well.
Right. So you have all these guys who you can, you know, obviously lose money as a pro golfer. You show up for the Wednesday Pro-Am, you perform. Thursday, Friday, you perform. You don't make the cut, you lost money. So golf for the longest time found this acceptable and it was kind of cool. You know, you got to earn your way. But it was different from all those sports. And so you have Liv come in and say, hey, why don't we treat you all got like athletes? And athletes, you bring in money by your name and the merch you sell, et cetera, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's more sustainable for – I never thought it was fair to the guys who put the week in from talking to the guys out there. You know, they get a special request to do a cocktail with a guy from the, you know, the sponsor and – you're doing the Wednesday Pro-Am and you're out there and you're signing autographs. You play Thursday, Friday and just lost, you know, $7,000 that week between traveling, staying in a hotel, your fitness trainer, right? While they still sold tickets and your TV rights were still being used on a Thursday and a Friday. I never thought that was fair for the player to have to net lose money on that week.
And so not only do they net lose money, but they've given the rights over to their TV image to the PGA Tour, which then sells them. Or remember in Mickelson's case, he wanted to use it for the match, and he had to pay like $1 million per clip.
Yes. So and you're still promoting the tour while you're out there, even though you missed the cut.
Right. And you're labeled an independent contractor, so they don't, you know, provide you a lot. So you had this, and then you have the Liv guys come in and, you know, offer all these things that, you know, here's money up front, which is basically equates to, if you look at it, from a step back, just basically appearance fees up front, right? You could say, hey, John Rahm, you're going to play 14 tournaments a year for 4 years. Here's your appearance money up front, plus, you know, and you can also get some equity and you can also win more money. But we've had appearance money being paid for years as well. So the concept isn't completely foreign.
No, think of this, which we used to traditionally call the silly season, right? Where they would all go overseas or play in the JCPenney or whatever. Essentially, that was appearance money.
And who was the king of the silly season?
My man, Freddie Couples.
Yeah, exactly, which is why it's astounding that he is one of the biggest voices against Liv, even as we brought up earlier, you know, taking a shot at Greg Norman for having to purchase his own ticket.
Yes, you're right. I mean, because those guys would always go bring in a bucket of cash in that last two and a half months of the season back in the day, right? They would just go and fill it up. Well, deservedly, as they should, right? You know, that was kind of how they, you know, got a guaranteed, you know, a guaranteed money when there wasn't as much money in pro golf in the 90s and early 2000s, right? There wasn't the money that's in there now. So they would go and do that. You know, I was going to ask you too, you know, switching gears just from watching from all these years, because like I said, we're close to the same age. Tiger at the Masters this year. What's your view of his playing? What's happening? And how do you think he goes forward to try to not kind of do what's happening? You know, he makes the cut, then he just falls apart. I don't, you know, if his body can even walk that far for four holes and play at a level it needs to be played at for a major championship. Like, how do you assess what you're seeing with Eldrick?
I would say that Tiger is basically right now like some of the guys on the LIV Golf Tour who are not necessarily competitive, but bring views. So you bring this guy out there, and this is kind of a controversial take, but I mean, he does look like he may be on some type of enhancements. You know what I mean? So to even get this guy out there, he seems to be on some type of, and the PGA Tour has a therapeutic use exemption. And all I'm going to say, look at his traps. And his delts, those androgen receptors are more sensitive there, and he seems to have filled out more than he was in his 30s when he was also a workout fiend. So you got this guy who brings the views. Physically walking is a chore for him. I mean, he's withdrawn for so many events now. You still shove him out there for the Masters. He breaks, 24 cuts in a row?
Yeah.
So he sets that record.
He doesn't look bad for like two rounds, but it's like the third and fourth just seem to be killing the poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, they're literally making this dude still kind of the face of the PGA Tour, trying to get the views, trying to milk him for all he's worth, and physically they're destroying him. I mean, let's put it that way. I mean, his body obviously can't handle it if you keep withdrawing, or you have to call like the Genesis, you have to call 911 because you feel dehydrated. So, you know, at some point someone has to step in and say, it's like a UFC fighter. Like, how many times are you going to get knocked out? And then before they say, hey, Dana White, pull this guy.
Why do you think he wants to keep doing it? Right. If he really can't win. And now I think if he had a golf cart, you know, if you could give him a golf cart, it'd be probably just fine. It's the walking, right? With a bad knee and then the ankle and all the rest. I mean, it's got to be hell for the guy. I give him all the credit in the world for just making cuts and competing. I mean, most any other person who went through the physical things he's gone through would just be done. Yeah, it's incredible you can even make a cut at late 40s. The wheels he has without much body rotation anymore. I mean, the swing's all upper body. I mean, that's why he's bulked up really heavy too, just to kind of hit it hard from upstairs. I mean, the body doesn't rotate like it used to or even close. He's still Tiger Woods, so he, you know, hits his irons good. He can get his way around the golf course, but yeah, like when is it just like, I can't win, so why am I doing this? I don't want to be out here for just making cuts.
Well, here's the
question. I can't imagine that's what motivates him.
Well, here's the question for you. Do you think, and you just brought it up, I mean, he could be on the Champions Tour in less than 2 years in a cart being very competitive, but what they're doing to him now probably decreases his competitiveness on the Senior Tour.
I would have bet great money he would have never played the Champions Tour if you'd have asked me 10, 15 years ago, right? I think he would be awesome out there at this point, right? Because he can take the cart. He hangs out with Darren Clark. He sees those guys he used to compete against. Three rounds, not four. He's plenty long, and he doesn't have to walk. And he can legitimately compete and win at that level out there. And those guys are still great players out there. Like, if you go watch a Champions Tour event, like, those guys can still play golf, right? Don't kid yourself. I think he would be fantastic out there, and that would help that tour out tremendously, which, you know, I have to imagine that tour is really struggling with everything that's going on, right? And less of the Greg Normans and those guys, once they turn 50, you know, how many of these guys, say, who are 40 now with $100 million in the bank are going to want to go and play that at 50 years old?
Well,
if it happens too, what we think is the injuries get bad enough where they're swinging so damn hard for 20 years, are they even able to? And do they want to?
Well, look at the Champions Tour when Phil was playing it. Goes out, wins four times, no brainer. You got Richard Bland who could be out there, you know, at least part-time if he wanted to. Lee Westwood. So you have all these big names that aren't allowed to play on the Champions Tour.
And Perez.
It's kind of like, yes, it's all these names.
Close. Yep.
Yeah, all these names coming up, Stenson, et cetera, you know, all these guys who could be there in a few years. And it's really cutting off your nose to spite your face at this point, because you needed those big names to come up so that, you know, more of the journeyman type, like a Steve Alker, don't dominate.
Right. Right. Or if Steve Alker plays good, you still have, for that tour to work, you still have to have recognizable, and they try to obviously do that, right? It's the hardest Q school in the world to get through. But for that tour to work, you need recognizable names. I would love to see Tiger on the Champions Tour with a cart, because I think the golf would be really good. Three rounds would be so much better for him. I think he'd be smiling and having a blast competing against Steve Stricker out there and some of those guys in a few years. I really hope he plays it.
Well, I mean,
because I think he would play really well, and he'd be fun to see if he didn't have to walk that much.
He's been playing golf since he was like 10 months old. You know, I mean, he's been playing forever. It's pretty much what he knows. So I feel like, you know, what would Tiger do if he wasn't playing golf?
Yeah. And I think before all these injuries, I think he thought he would probably be playing some really good golf in his mid-50s, which he probably could have been if he didn't have the knee problems and the ankle and the back fusion. Right? I think he could have been very competitive like Sam Snead in his 50s. But, you know, unfortunately for him, it's not in the cards. So I think for him to be competitive, now I guess he could catch lightning in a bottle if it's a, you know, a tournament without a super deep field and you don't have to bomb it and his body feels great that week. It's 91 degrees. I mean, could I see him potentially? I mean, well, here's a good question for you. Do you think he could win a John Deere Classic with that field on that golf course? That golf course is not that hard. You think that's still possible for Tiger Woods?
I don't think you can
hit at a Colonial or a John Deere Classic type golf course, right? Where it's not a major championship golf. Where you have to make a lot of birdies, right? You got to shoot 20 under.
It's the one guy you can't really bet against because he's come back. Who would have thought the 2019 Masters would have Tiger winning?
Exactly. But is this last ankle injury the that was before that? Is this enough, or do you just still never bet against Tiger Woods because it's Tiger effing Woods?
I, you know, on a small on a John Deere field, you know, maybe, you know, less famous guys, less high ranked guys. I don't know because he continually surprises us. The swing still looks good. I mean, you wouldn't think a guy with no legs could still hit a 320. He's proven that wrong. But, you know, again, I still think there's some kind of a Lance Armstrong vibe there.
It's going to be interesting to see where all of this stuff goes, right? It's just, it's going to be, it's a fascinating time to be a golf fan because I do love, you know, and I'm friends with players on both tours and I'm happy for them that they're all doing really well because, like I said, from that standpoint, it's been, you know, for the players, it's been a net positive. But I hope this thing all comes together. And I think a world tour would actually be really cool. Like, you know, that event they had in, I think it was Sydney for LIV was, like, really well attended. You know, same with, like, there's not a PGA Tour event in Chicago anymore. Like, that's just weird. So I hope they would hit some of these huge markets around the world. And I think the, you know, if there was a relegation of in and out at the end of the season, it would be so fascinating of young star coming up and a veteran hanging on and there's that much money at play. I you know, I don't know exactly how it would look, but I think it could be very, very compelling if done right with some great golf, with the best fields and some, you know, things that you're really going to want to watch, you know, of how does this all unfold with them all together more often. I hope it gets there.
Did you watch the LIV Q School this year?
I did not.
That was one of the best tournaments of the year. I mean, you can't have more on the line than you're some journeyman on some random tour that probably, you know, the winner gets 15 grand. And now if you perform in the top three, then, you know, your minimum payment is 120 grand for 14 events or so.
Right. That's where this stuff would get interesting. Yeah, 100%. And that's like my back to like liking to watching Corn Ferry Tour. It's sort of that idea, right? You know, if the guy wins that week on a Corn Ferry Tour, he's got a real shot of making a PGA Tour, right? And that's fun to watch. Those young guys under pressure of what happens. No, I mean, this is where I think it could be really interesting to watch of who's getting relegated and who's moving up. You know, that's sporting at its best, like that kind of pressure. And what it means to go up and what it means to go down. No, it's going to be fascinating. I was going to ask you one more thing before we get out of here. There's so much we could talk about. But, you know, you kind of exploded on the scene. Mutual friend, Hank Haney. How much has Hank's mention of your you know, social media presence and that stuff, how much has that helped? And how crazy is it for you that somebody of Hank's level is, you know, you're listening to his podcast and here he is mentioning you and says how much he loves your account. Like, he's a really good guy. And, you know, to have him pulling for you in your corner has to be pretty cool. I mean, it's Hank Haney.
It's beyond surreal. Imagine you're a random dude 3 years ago, decided to start a YouTube channel. And then at some point, you know, Hank Haney's doing a podcast on a video made or complimenting your ex account. It's ridiculous. And I actually use it when I want to get people on the show. I'll send that person, you know, the Hank Haney episode. And so when Hank Haney says, "Oh, this guy's the greatest," that gets me instant street cred. So I mean, I'm,
yeah, and Hank and Hank's seen a he's seen a thing or two, and he doesn't bullshit people, right? Like, Hank's going to tell you the truth,
right? So, you know, me being shameless, I'll use that. I'll use those videos and send them to people. And for example, I got the guy from Be Better Golf on, Brendan DeVore. I was like, "These guys very popular on YouTube. I wanted him on." Sent him the Hank Haney podcast, and he said, "Sure." But I don't know necessarily if he'd say, "Sure, I'll come on your show." your channel if I don't have these Hank Haney podcast episodes. It's instant credibility. It's a million thanks to Hank Haney for it. I can't give a bigger shout out to a guy, you know, and I mean, like, if any person who has Hank Haney shout you out, you're going to feel like, you know, very fortunate. And I also, you know, you have your buddies who are haters. I send it to them too, and they'll listen to it in silence.
Yeah, well, you know, you're not going to make everybody happy, right? And especially when you're kind of doing opinion stuff, how you're doing on Twitter. But, you know, you probably get a lot of people following you as well who want to see what you'll say next. So if people do want to follow you on social, what's the best way, you know, for them to watch you or follow you?
Big Boy Pants Golf, YouTube's hottest golf channel. It's the name, Big Boy Pants Golf. You also have on X, Big Boy Pants Golf. Easy to find. And, yes, it was fabulous being on this the Sub 70 podcast, Jason.
Yeah, let's do it again. As these topics, and there's not going to be a lack of stuff to talk about. Let's do this every now and then, because I think it's been a great conversation. I love your opinions. We'll agree. I'm sure we'll have some. We'll disagree. But it's fun to bounce these things back and forth. And the cool part is we both love golf and we love this game. It's just a really interesting period of time, you know, for us to see it and watch it up close. And, you know, like you were saying, you know, last year, you know, I went to all of it. I was at a Champions Tour event, a European Tour event, DP World Tour, I keep saying it that way, a PGA Tour event and a LIV event, right? Like, I will follow all of it. So, and a Corn Ferry Tour event. I went to one of those as well. So, yeah, I mean, I love this stuff. You know, I'm so fortunate I get to do this for a living from my side. Now you feel the same way, that fortunate we get to talk about something we love, and it's going to be, 2024 is going to be an interesting year, that's for sure.
Jason, again, it's been tremendous. I look forward to doing these more episodes with you. And, of course, I look forward to having you on Big Boy Pants Golf.
I'm ready to do it. We'll get that scheduled as well. So, sounds good. Appreciate it. And hang in there.